It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along, Captain Mike. What's that the sound of?
That's the wind blowing, man.
The winds of change.
Oh, my goodness.
That was our conversation this morning that you and I want to get together and go take advantage of a Saturday or Sunday for a little snapper run here before we get in the depths of hunting season. But 5-foot seas?
It's been open 3 weeks.
I ain't going.
On weekends. And I know a few people that went on that Monday that it was open, but you can't go right now. It's 3 to 5, I believe, today.
So
2 to 4 tomorrow. There'll be some people go tomorrow, but it won't be me.
Yeah. Then that. Hey, by the way, we're gonna talk about that later on in the show because I got a couple calls this week and a text from somebody going, "How long is the snapper season gonna last?"
Yep.
I don't know. Depends on how many people go. We'll get into that.
We'll talk about that.
Also, we'll talk about getting ready for November right around the corner. I mean, heck, we're now at the point that does are gonna be in. For bow season here in the South Zone.
Right.
And before you know it, it's going to be ute season.
Yep. Ute is right around the corner.
Then the big kids deer season. So we'll talk some deer hunting coming up in just a little bit. Also, any of those bow hunting stories you have from the last couple week and a half or so, we'll get those.
Slim, but
yeah, we got some.
Maybe.
All right. And I want to bring on with us Blakely Ellis, who's executive director at CCA Alabama. I've got a lot to talk about with him this morning as well. Hey, Blakely, what's up?
Not much, Sean. How you guys?
Good, yeah. Except for it being 5-foot seas. I mean, we want to go fishing. But
of course, there's a lot of things we want to do. There's so many things to do, in this part of the world. We talk about it all the time, Blakely. I mean, we're very fortunate that we can. There's a lot of great freshwater fishing, a lot of inshore, offshore fishing. You know, we just got a lot of opportunities. So it is going to be rough in the Gulf, but hey. Now we can go to the camp and go shoot some hogs or something, Sure, we got plenty of things to do.
Blakely, I want to talk about this, too, with CCA Alabama, CCA overall. I've been talking on Midday Mobile and on my show with folks that are coming in and talking about different charity events, and I keep pointing out, if there were things on your calendar, you look in your phone calendar, things you do every year, you go to this banquet or do this golf tournament or whatever it is to raise money for charities. Just because you can't, things have canceled and or been moved, that doesn't mean those charities aren't doing the great work they were doing before. That, from your perspective, in a nonprofit, what's that like?
Yeah, well, first off, you're exactly right, and I have heard you mention that. And when I heard that, I thought, man, it's like I wrote that script and hands it to Sean. He did it on his own because it's definitely true. And the way you presented it is. I mean, it hits home so closely because, we do, even though our fundraising and the funds coming in, is paused right now for the most part, our efforts have not. And so, we were fortunate to be in a position that we could continue putting the same projects together, and we didn't have to, back out of any of our commitments. And so we've been able to keep our pedal to the metal on our projects. But we do have to start refilling the fuel tank, if you know what I mean. And this is, we've got fundraisers coming up, online to try to put a dent into some of that until we can get back in person and start having our in-person events again.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk about what's coming up, and it's also maybe even in your world with the Coastal Conservation Association, it's even bigger than. It's weird because so many people bought new boats, went fishing, fished more, and all that. When they couldn't go to whatever the things that were canceled, there was even more pressure on the fishing world. So people were super engaged in this thing that we love in coastal fishing. At the same time, the mechanism where normally it'd be, I'm sure if I'm you, I'm going, great. All these people, new boats, people getting into fishing. This is really going to be great for all our efforts to help conserve. But then they can't come to an event. I mean, that's everybody's all fired up. And then you can't come to a banquet or do the things you normally do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's, it's definitely an interesting, you know, scenario and dynamic. And, you know, we are optimistic and hopeful that people, you know, as they did, as we all did during the last 6 months, you know, kind of reflect on what's important to you and how you actually
fishing.
Do want to spend your time. And
fishing.
You know, a lot of people did decide to head outdoors and to go fishing. And, I mean, it was clear as day on the boat lots were all empty. The tackle shops were picked over. And you know, all of my manufacturers that I talked to and work with, they were all way back ordered. And so that's encouraging that there was that much activity. And, you know, we're hopeful that people will remember that whenever we can start meeting again and having those in-person banquets again, but there are opportunities that they can, you know, support us until we can have those in-person events. And, you know, that our CCA license plate is probably one of the easiest ways you can show support for us, because that's something you got to do anyway. And we get, I think, $42 out of the $50 fee comes back to us, and it stays right here in Alabama.
And that's something, yeah, you can just ask for when it's time to get a new plate, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yep.
And that's $50 a year, but you do have mm-hmm. that
42 of them going to CCA.
Awesome.
You know, I skip over this, and it's my mistake because I've, you know, been a fan of what CCA has done and been a member for so very long. Let's stop for a second mm-hmm. and think about all the new people that just bought boats and got into what we've known for a long time is a great thing to do. And that's what does CCA do? I mean, what's the mission statement of CCA and CCA Alabama?
So we work to protect anglers' access to the resource. Make sure that there's, you know, there's fair and reasonable limits and laws in place so that, you know, we're not mismanaging the resource for the next generation, because that's what we're all about, is not managing it for us, but managing for the next generation, because it doesn't belong to us to say how to use it. And so if there's a healthy population of fish, we want to be able to go catch them. If there's not, then we want to do what's needed to protect them. And then so we support efforts for research initiatives. We do a lot of work with the University of South Alabama for research. And then we also have had a lot of involvement over the years with habitat and artificial reefs. And so that's really where we've poured the majority of our efforts of our 38 years in business has been with artificial reefs.
Yeah, when y'all are at, like, the reason they're called CCA 1 and 2 and 3, when you're fishing those, you know, and having a great time, thank Coastal Conservation Association of Alabama. I mean, it's a direct thing that people can look at and touch and benefit from.
Yep. And, you know, we did help the state put together their plan called AL Reefs, which they submitted and received the Restore Oil Spill Fund for. And I want to say to date it received $40 million worth of funds. So
wow.
our money wasn't much good anymore in the artificial reef game. And so we changed gears a little bit. And a lot of our efforts the last 3 or 4 years have gone into the Department of Conservation's fish hatchery over in Gulf Shores, which
it's a cool thing. That's a cool. I mean, it's cool that they're bringing these fish and putting them into the system here. This is I don't think this gets enough attention. It's the Mariculture Center, right?
Yeah, Claude Petit Mariculture Center, right by the airport.
And y'all did a big deal with the flounder in the last year.
That's right.
So yeah, released. I forget how many thousands and thousands of flounders into the bay.
Yeah, that last year was the first, this year, actually. So January, they had the successful spawn, and they released them in March. And that they're going to be able to improve on that a lot, because they kind of had to crack the code on the flounder. But they're going to be geared up to have another successful spawn this winter. And the interesting is flounder, you can only get one spawn out of them per year. You can't trick them into spawning 4 or 5 times, like speckled trout or redfish or pompano. Flounder, you get one shot, and that's it for 12 months. And so a lot of pressure gets put on this guy to deliver. But they've got a great facility, and we've helped them out with about $175,000 over the last 2 or 3 years we've contributed to that facility. And all of that money got matched to turn each one of our dollars into $2 or $3 through the matching federal program. So you don't have to look very far to see where we spend our funds.
Yeah, is that Wallop Bro money, or where is that coming from?
That's the sportsman
Pittman Robertson.
That's it. Yep.
If you're just joining us, talking to Blakely Ellis with CCA Alabama, I want to point out, too, that the symbol fish for CCA is the redfish, right, from way back. And if we want to talk about successes for CCA, it not a month goes by on this show that I don't talk about redfishing now is better than it's ever been. Each year I say that again. You know, usually we're talking about, you remember the good old days? The good old days are now for redfish.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's more redfish where I never even thought of looking for them growing up, and now they're redfish. So I think your track record, I mean, people want to say, what does CCA do? I think that's a flag you fly high right there.
Yeah, you're right, and that's one that, you know, has been a while, but, you know, that is where we got our start and our bread and butter early on was our efforts to, you know, start having some protections put in place for some of these recreationally important species like redfish and speckled trout, and getting game fish status set up for them, and working really hard to, you know, we worked really hard to attempt to have gill nets removed from Alabama, and ended up coming up with an agreement with the gill net fishery, but we didn't get them all out. But, you know, that's something that that's really where we got our start in Texas and back in 1979. And then Alabama was started, the first chapter outside of Texas, in 1982 with the original goal of getting rid of the gill net fishing.
So let's talk about what's coming up now, because we can't have – and the banquets, y'all look forward to these if you've never been. You're one of those people that just bought the new boat this last year, and getting into it, the banquets are a great time. But because we can't have one this fall, you've got a virtual banquet going on, a virtual auction.
Yep, that's right. And so we work hard to get, you know, a lot of good stuff from all of our sponsors, and, you know, coolers and rods and reels and apparel and stuff like that – usually I sell this stuff at the events, but obviously we didn't have any this year. So
right.
this is our opportunity to put some of that stuff online and allow y'all to bid on them and purchase maybe some Christmas gifts or some, you know, some restocking some supplies for next year. But we've got lots of great stuff that I know everybody's going to enjoy.
So how do we find the items? How do we go do this?
So the auction is going to start on next Thursday. That's Thursday, the 29th, October 29th, at 10 o'clock a.m. And it's going to run through Sunday, November 1st at 7 o'clock p.m. So we're going to have it for 4 days. Easiest way to find it is you can text the word CCA Fall.
All mashed together, all one word, CCA Fall.
Yep, and text it to the number 76278, and that should bounce back a link to your phone that'll allow you to participate in the auction.
Wait a second. So when we do that, so when we text CCA Fall to 76278, do we then see the items, or how does that work?
That's going to bounce back a link that you'll click on, and that'll take you to the event page on your phone.
So, you know, I'm thinking about the idea of the online auction, but you talk about the different items, the cool logoed up stuff that I love from CCA. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be just like a one of something, or, you know what I'm saying, for the auction, or will we, if we go, hey, we really like that item, I want to buy that?
Yeah, so we're going to have two kind of parts to it. We'll have traditional style and auction, or your eBay style items that you can, you know, bid on once, or you can set your max bid and you don't have to worry about it again.
Okay.
And then we'll also have some buy it now items that you can just go in and say, hey, I want that. Boom, purchase it right away, and it's yours. And within that buy it now section, I'm also going to have, you know, a lot of the items that I've only got like a size large in, or a small, or a couple of this or that, that I'm just going to be blowing them out for a really good price. And so each day we're going to upload some new items into that buy it now category that are kind of like a closeout situation that, you know, not much use for me holding on to it any longer. So we're going to just get that stuff out of here.
In other words, you need us to check back each day.
That'd be smart.
Yeah. Now, can you Can you go directly to www.gcca and get there, or do you have to go?
Yeah, it'll be an event. It'll be on our events page at our website, ccaalabama.org.
Okay.
And then that link will take you to the actual page. You can view it either way on your phone or on a desktop. But it is an easy to operate system. I promise you that. It's, young people, old people, everybody in between has been very complimentary of our setup.
Good deal. What about we talked about items, Blakely? What about trips, man? The great fishing trips.
Yeah. So. We've got right now seven or eight local guides that have donated trips, and some of those include, you know, Captain Richard Rutland, Patrick Garmison. We've got, I don't know if any of y'all surf fishermen out there, Bama Beach Bum, and he's going to donate a surf fishing charter along with Captain Dusty Hayes that works down at Sam's Tackle in Orange Beach. They're going to do a combo surf fishing trip for four people. Got some Delta fly fishing with Sam Glass. Let's see Hayden Olds doing his tarpon trip down in Orange Beach.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah, and Hayden, if you don't know him, you need to, because he's one of the tarpon whisperers.
That is truth, right there.
Radio this past year. Yeah,
he good at it.
Yes. He is, and so if you win that one and go fishing with Hayden, hopefully you'll be lucky enough to see and land a tarpon, and if you do, he'll have some of our tarpon tags, and so you'll be able to tag that fish, and so that's going to be an item that it's always been a really popular one at our Eastern Shore event, and so it's going to be interesting to see that one as it's going to be open to a larger group this time around, so. That'll be one for sure to check out.
Okay, so before we wrap here, once again, starting when? Starting Thursday, right?
Thursday the 29th at 10 o'clock a.m., and it's going to close Sunday, November 1st at 7 o'clock p.m.
Somebody listening to us right now that said, hey, I'm riding down the road, Blakely, I can't write all this stuff down for where to text and all that, is if they go to the website, like Mike asked, that'll be there? Or what about your social media? Will you have that info up there?
That'll be
well?
There. And that's right. Also on our social media, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, we'll be pushing out the info. And so hopefully you'll be able to find it one of those different ways.
All right. Good deal. I appreciate you checking in, and I can't wait till we can all catch up in person in the future.
Me too, Sean. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. There he is.
Thank
Executive
you, Blake.
Director of CCA Alabama, Blakely Ellis, joining us. And we're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. We're glad you're here.
Absolutely.
Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. And outdoors. So make sure, because you can go to facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. That takes you to one of the pages, but put outdoors on the end of it. So you can go straight to the outdoors page, share pictures, check out articles that I've popped up that started a lot of controversy. Don't fertilize oak trees.
Yeah.
You know, it's
sometimes. Hey, look, I learned something.
Hey,
last
I did
week.
Too.
I didn't realize. I mean, I have fertilized oak trees in the past, you know, thinking that, man, that's where I'm going to bow hunt next year.
Yep.
And I wonder why those acres didn't fall.
Yeah, so
but
so,
we learned some stuff last week.
Yeah, this article, a QDMA article that says basically a couple things. That number one, you're wasting your money fertilizing oak trees. Number two, if you want to have more acorns in the woods, then cut down oak trees. So you're like, what? Okay, I know it sounds crazy. Go read the article. It's linked up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Make sure to put that outdoors on there. All right, a couple things here. You can look there. I know we've had some stories up this week about new record catfish, which, by the way, okay, so the story, one of the stories on there, A Florida man breaks a Georgia fishing record a few miles south of Columbus. Here is a story from WKRG. It said one Florida man recently broke a Georgia record for catching the largest blue cat in Georgia, and it was caught just a few miles south of Columbus. Tim Trone of Havana, Florida, took a weekend trip to visit his friends in Georgia, participated in a fishing tournament. Little did he know, at the time, he'd be a world record-setting weekend for him on the Chattahoochee River. It goes through the whole thing. So his catfish...
So it's a world record, not a state record.
Yeah, I guess it's... I misspoke. Would be a record-setting weekend. Let's see here. So previously... The catfish record was 40 pounds, so 50 pounds would beat this. However, the number would continue to climb once he caught and weighed it on a 100-pound scale. So we pulled up, and the bottom scaled out. I knew right then I've got a Georgia record. Trone then said he had to take the fish to another weighing site, hopefully to get a more accurate answer, to solidify his record-setting catch. He said, I went over there, we weighed the fish, and it came out to 110 pounds, 6 ounces.
He didn't beat the record. He slammed the record.
I mean, not even close.
I mean, over double.
Yeah.
Over double what the state record was.
Yeah. 110 pounds.
Blue cat. That's a monster.
That's a bunch of fillets right there. That's serious.
So is that the state record or the world record?
Well, it doesn't go on.
It doesn't go on. It just says record.
I bet you it's a – well, let's see. You know what? Google is our friend. And what I want to get into is there was a record somewhere, North Dakota, South Dakota, somewhere like that, that forever they said it was a world record. Which one gets bigger, Channel or Blue?
I'm not sure.
But they had misidentified, you know, because they look so much the same.
Right.
So, and they went back and looked at this. Like it had been the state record for whatever, let's say Channel Cat for all this time. And they went back, and somebody, one of the biologists up there or something, said, well, y'all look at this fin or that fin on it. He said, that's not a channel cat. That's a blue cat. The catfish had been their record for like 30 years up there.
They need Roy Moore up there.
Yeah.
Roy Martin. I'm sorry, not Roy Moore. Roy Martin up there.
Yes.
To identify that.
What I mean, they had like their whole state records for like 30 years had shown it. And then like some new kid biologist said, that's not the right species.
Yeah.
By the way, the current world record blue cat, recognized by IGFA, 143-pounder. Caught in June 2011 in Kerr Lake, Virginia.
Okay, so now...
143-pounder. This 110-pounder is gigantic.
It is. So now we're talking state record.
Yeah.
Not a world record.
Right, state record for Georgia.
Yeah. Unless it was a IGFA line class or something.
Do you think catfishermen on purpose are not line classing?
No. Huh?
Well, I caught this bunch of catfish, but I was using a tippet, a 5X tippet, to catch them.
Yeah.
But that's
on
still
on 2 pound line.
That's right. That's right. We had it measured with the little breaking thing and the whole. But it was it's a heck of a catfish there. So, but yeah, I got to find that story. Maybe I'll find it before next week. I'd say North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, somewhere up in there.
Yeah.
And they had their record forever in all these years. They went, well, that's not the right species.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, I just wanted to.
Well, it'd be like catching a blue marlin. And weighing it in or measuring it, looking at it through a picture and saying, well, that's a white marlin.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a 200-pound white marlin.
Right.
You know?
That'd be the record for white marlin.
Yeah, look at that fin.
Except it's not.
Yeah, they look just alike except for that fin.
look at that catfish.
That's fat.
Yeah, we'll have to, y'all Google that up and look at that
Virginia. World record catfish.
That is.
Blue cat.
That's stupid big.
That is.
Just Google that up as we're talking. All right, so I don't even know how I got off on that.
I don't either.
But it's one of the stories on our, always. You can see that story and a lot more over at our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. All right, so talked a bunch of fishing there and banquets with Blakely Can I talk some hunting here? Can we do some?
Yeah, I guess so. Go ahead.
Because all I've been doing, I hope I have a good hunting season because I've eaten about 2 pounds of dust over the last couple of weeks getting everything planted. I probably have enough.
What, you don't have an air-conditioned tractor?
I do not. No, open cab. I probably have enough triple 13 residue in me that I've grown 2 or 3 inches. Every pair of jeans I've got has got some kind of mix of seed in the pockets of them.
That and probably a little oil stain
on it.
Yeah,
everything's stained up. Yes, so it's planting season. I know we're a little bit late. Okay, a bit late. But, you know, down here in Mobile County, I mean, I'm in no rush to get ahead of this. I'm not going to. Unless something really changes, we're not going to get a frost till February, so it hadn't been too cold.
Okay, let me ask you this. Now, I haven't seen on Facebook many deer bucks killed.
I've seen zero.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a couple of small ones. But, I mean, that's very unusual. Here we've had a week of bow season, and I don't know whether people are just not posting the pictures, but I hadn't heard of anybody.
Weather-wise, it's not been great. You know what I'm saying? It's not. It's been okay, but
this past Saturday was awesome. This past Saturday was it cool? Up at our camp, it was 42.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it was awesome. Now
the tractor had me warm, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah,
yeah, it was. No, you're right. It was. It was nice. On it all blends.
I know it does. I know, but I am shocked that I haven't seen.
I saw tons of deer as a plant. I mean, dang, deer wouldn't. You'd come through. One of the fields have a feeder in it, and I'd come through there to disc it. Okay, so I'd disc the field, and I mean, I didn't have to go just but around the corner to get the other tractor that had the hopper on it to run seed. I'm talking about I'm gone 7 minutes. Come back in, there's like 8 deer standing there at the feeder. I'm like, where'd y'all come from? Y'all were watching me the whole time discing.
Well, yeah, and that's what they do. Exact same thing with me, Sean.
they come back and they're there.
Listen, they'll come up to us while we're there. They hear us fooling with the
feeder. Why is the black belt, y'all?
But I'm telling you, we're feeding, you know, putting, and now we've just got to where we make a lot of noise when we're there.
Yep.
And the deer literally come out of the woods. We see them, and they have come up within 10 foot of us. Within 10 foot of us while we're standing there.
Because they know it's fixing to happen. That corn's going in there. But this was, I wasn't filling feeders. So there's a feeder in this field.
Yeah. Okay. But they heard
the
noise.
And I'm discing the field. And I finished discing.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I got to go around the corner and swap out the tractor with another one up there that's got the hopper on it so I can come in and put seed and fertilizer in. I'm 8 minutes round trip, but I'm coming back down the road in another diesel tractor. And in that 7 minutes, they've all filed out and they're standing around. And then they're looking at me.
Saying, where's the food at? We heard you were here. Yes. We know you were here, but where is the food?
Yes.
So you got to associate every time.
Oh, yeah.
Every time you go there and you're making noise, you need to put some corn out.
Right.
So that every time you come, they will come out.
Oh, yeah,
of
you can train them. You know, you can train them like, you know, we used to do around the camp house and stuff. Had area just didn't shoot them.
That's right.
With a coffee can.
Yeah.
With corn and that noise of that corn rattle around the metal coffee can.
Here they come.
Yeah, they come to it.
Yeah.
We'll have to ask about how long that process takes. Next week's show, by the way, just preview, the deer coordinator for the state of Alabama, Chris Cook, who's a fantastic guest. He is like the deer authority in our state.
Yeah, he was on with us last year. And let me tell you.
We did 2 weeks with him.
I think so. Let me tell you, he knows everything there is to know about a deer.
And then you got questions about the rut and all the different runts and why they move dates in the state and, you know, cull bucks versus what age they should get and all that. This guy lives, eating, breathes this stuff.
Yeah, and he is excellent at it. He is very smart. He knows what he's doing.
So he'll be on with us next week. So get everybody ready for season. So planting stuff. Getting that stuff done.
And we went hog hunting this weekend.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I did see some success. Somebody had success because I saw some hogs laid out there. Where's my tenderloin?
Well, you got to go to the people's house I gave them to and get some from. We didn't fool with any of them.
So what y'all do? Did y'all stalk them? Or
no, we went to our feeders. You know, they've been coming to our feeders and just every morning, every afternoon. And I just wanted to shoot a few of them and hopefully kind of run them off.
Yeah. Or make them go fully nocturnal?
Yeah, and that'll happen too, yeah. So we ended up killing 4, which, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm happy with that. If I could kill 4 maybe this coming weekend and then this weekend and then 4 more maybe the next, maybe I can get them where they're not coming to the feeder so often. Right now it's just they own. I mean, they come and they just eat every kernel till it's all gone.
What are you seeing up your way? Because, like, in the Black Belt, you know, when the hogs showed up, I remember hearing more people talked about they would have them, then they wouldn't have. You know, they kind of came and went. And
they
did at first.
At first, they'd come.
You'd like, oh, y'all got
them. They'd tear everything up, to eat, you know, root the roads up, do everything.
But then they'd move on.
And then they would go away, and you say, well, what happened? You know, you don't see them for a month. Not anymore.
No. They're just there.
They're there.
It's like the river swamp.
They are there. They're not going anywhere. And I guess as long as you feed them corn, there's no reason.
Right. That's one thing with the everybody feeding now, as we're trying to fight the hog population, they're probably going to double or triple just because all the feeding. But they'll be tasty.
That's the good thing.
Next time, tenderloin.
Corn-fed hog, son.
That's what I need. All right, coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And during the break, talking a little snapper there as well. Let's go run through this because I got some texts this last week. And I think most people may understand this, but I want to make sure that everybody does. I was asked, when snapper season going to end? How many days do we have? And I said, I don't know.
Yeah, and nobody knows.
It's a formula, right? So we're fishing the remainder of the tonnage for the 2020 season, and it all depends on how many people go and how many people go, how many days go. And it's Saturday, Sunday. Okay, Saturday, Sundays.
Yeah, remember that, because when they first opened it up, it was Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Mm-hmm. But they've cut the Monday out.
Right.
So now to the tonnage is filled to the end of the year, it's a Saturday and a Sunday.
So like if only two people went, we would never get the tonnage. You see what I'm saying? We can't tell you when snapper season ends because it depends on how many people go.
That's right.
And, you know, and bring fish back.
And ever since it's been open, it's been rough.
Right.
There's only been one day, and that was that Monday that it was open, that a few people did go out.
Yeah.
But it was rough. And, you know, but anyway, so, and then it's been rough every weekend since. So we're not going out this weekend.
Nope.
You know, it's 3 to 5 today, and I think 2 to 4 tomorrow. There might be a few people try to go tomorrow.
Right.
But then next weekend will be open.
But it's not anywhere near the numbers of summertime fishing.
No, it's not. A lot of people are doing other things now.
Like during the summertime, we might be able to go through that tonnage in 3 days or 4 days of fishing with the kind of bad weather and hunting season and other things going on. It may take a while to fish this
out, which is good.
More time, more chances to go.
Well, a lot of people, especially Orange Beach, too, think about that.
You know, they don't have a boat.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that left their boats in the lift, and they would, you know, go fishing.
Yeah.
Now they don't have a lift or a boat, you know, to go fishing. So, and then same way at Dolphin Island. Dolphin Island, a lot of people leave the boats in the lift, and they let it down and go fishing. But not now. A lot of them took it out for the hurricanes, and they hadn't put it back.
Mine's sitting on a trailer.
And they're not probably going to go back.
We've been talking about that. If I get a window, I may go, but it's tough once
I'm going.
Right. In the summertime, there's no question.
That's
this time of year, you know, and there's all the other distractions, which are good. I mean, the inshore fishing's getting really, really good. Captain Bobby's had good trips. There's some fishing starting to pick up north of the Causeway a little bit.
Right.
Real good fishing at the south end of the bay. You know, in the tidal rivers down there, that's been getting real good. So you got that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you got the woods.
Well, not only that, the offshore fishing. This time of the year is just, you know, off the chart good.
Yeah, you said
offshore,
the king.
When I say offshore, I'm talking, you know, well, all of it. The kings start really bunching up because the menhaden start going offshore and the mullet start going offshore and they start balling up with them and feeding. And it's, I mean, and then the tuna, you know, starts getting good. This great time of year for marlin fishing now.
That's I've always heard.
It's all good. Sailfish come in.
About the white marlin? I've always heard. I've never done it, but I've always heard the white marlin get in closer this time of year. Is that true?
Yeah, the white marlin, especially sailfish. Sailfish come. I mean, every year you'll hear people catch sailfish Southeast Banks.
And that's
every year.
What?
14 miles out south to Southeast Banks. So, and yeah, the white marlin, they're not nowhere near as many white marlins as there used to be.
Wonder why that is.
I don't know. I have no idea. And there's a lot more blue marlin than what it used to be, it seems like. But the white marlin, you just catch one here and there every now and then. We used to target white marlin. We went fishing white marlin because there was a lot of them out there.
Right.
Not anymore. I have no idea what changed.
Huh.
I don't know whether they – maybe wherever they went in the wintertime, maybe down in the Caribbean or whatever, maybe a lot of people caught them down there and kept them, made them. I don't know what happened. I don't know. But there's just not
I always remember hearing about that for October and stuff, that the white marlin was –
Well, white marlin was all year, though. I'm talking about all summer long, or not all year, all summer, all late spring and summer. There was just tons of white marlin caught. I mean, Pensacola Billfish Tournament, 4th of July, there'll be 100, 120 white marlin brought in. Everybody brought everything they caught in, whether it was white marlin, blue marlin, sailfish. It didn't make any difference. Everybody brought them in. It'd be 100 and something white marlin.
That's maybe where they went.
All the time. Well, maybe. That's maybe. I ain't think about that.
Maybe where they went. Hey, a couple other things there on the we got a second here. I'll tell you what, we'll run to break. We'll come back. I do want to update you on that transfer document. This is going to – people, you got to know about this. And, I mean, it's already ongoing. If you killed a deer – and you took it to a processor, you killed a buck, you know, you're going to take it to taxidermist. If you're going to transfer that deer, you're going to have a game check number. It could be a doe you're taking to get made into hamburger. It doesn't matter. You're going to have a game check number. We'll talk more about that when we come back. And, yeah, on that deer front, don't miss next week because it's we know from the last time he was on, it's a great conversation. Deer coordinator for the state of Alabama, Chris Cook, will join us on next week's show.
If you got any questions, send them to us.
Yes, absolutely. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad you're here with us. And yeah, just to revisit this, and we'll talk more about this on next week's show, I'm sure, when Chris Cook is on. But a game check. And something, Mike, you've reminded people over and over again, too. Game check, not just for bucks.
That's right. You got to do does, too.
So if you're going to find this out, that if you go to the processor or go to the taxidermist, or even if you want to give it give a deer to, you know, Uncle Slim, whoever, you're going to have that game check number.
I mean, a lot of people will not realize that if you kill a deer this afternoon, Sean, and you take it and give it to your brother, you have got to have a transfer piece of paper,
right,
to say that you gave that deer to him.
And here's the number.
And here's the number, the game check number on there.
And you can find, if you're going to do that person to person, you can go to outdooralabama.com, and that form's there to be able to fill out. The way my conversation so far with the state folks is, they're pretty much, they got the forms at every processor and taxidermist. They should have it. I mean, you can print some out to have for yourself, but if you're the processor or the taxidermist, they should have that form there. And then you would have your game check number from going to game check and say it's, you know, it's 01234, whatever it is.
And if you haven't done game check, I'm sure at that time and point, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to have done it before you take the deer out of the field.
Right.
But I'm sure at that time you'd be able to do that.
Right. So remember, that's just it's something new here, and it's gonna probably catch some people by surprise.
Oh yes, it's gonna catch a lot of people by surprise.
So do it.
Guarantee you, because they still don't know you're supposed to do a game check yet.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people don't have a clue.
And then the next level of people think it's just for bucks.
Yes.
You know.
Right.
And then the fewer number that realize it's for any deer.
Yes.
So game check your deer. If you wanted, got you a big buck taking the taxidermist, you got one taking the processor, you got to game check it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So just know that. Know that going ahead. Also, in a couple of weeks, you're going to be doing the show on your own. What are you going to do? I'm going to be gone.
Sean, I hope we got something we can play from last week.
Okay. Or like a pre-recording. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I hope so.
I may not go.
I couldn't do this without you, Sean.
I may not go because I had a conversation. The buddy,
you're said, going out west, going mule deer hunting.
Back to Colorado. Yep. Yeah. Mule deer hunting. High country stuff. And he said, what's your workout been for this one? Because last time I trained like a whole summer getting ready. And it's been the craziness of everything. I said, I've been on the Stairmaster like four times. And he said, you're going to die. I said, most likely. So I may not ever come back from this one, grinding it out up there. But even if you can get it done, at sea level, you get out there and you got, and you're not just walking in your tennis shoes. You got, you know, heavy boots on, and you're carrying, even if you're not backpacking into camp, to the bag you carry with you just to go for day hunts. Because, I mean, the Boy Scout and me, I'm not going to go without a way to start a fire and have build some sort of basic shelter.
That's right.
Because if you get in a snowstorm out there like we saw, I mean, you won't just be cold tonight. You'll die.
That's right.
So you got to have that gear. And at the same time, you can't hike, because you can't hike up in the places you're going with all your stuff on. So all that's got to go in a bag. All your heavy clothes.
Yeah, you'd be soaking wet by the time you got up here.
So that's all got to go in a backpack. Right. And then you got to have, you know, optics and spotting scopes and tripods. And if you're going to be up there like we do all day, you're going to have something to eat. And then you have to have water, because it's hard to find water in places. Dang, pack is 40 pounds.
Well, I probably about 50 years ago, people took a gun and went hunting, and that was all they did.
Yep.
But nowadays, the same way, like turkey hunting, you can't go turkey hunting with just a call anymore and a gun. So, I mean, same way going. But it's
but
more
safety,
important.
But
it's
the
more
safety stuff is really.
That's what I was going to say.
I got to have water. Right. To survive. You got to have water with you. And you need a way to start a fire.
Yeah.
Now, you can let a lot of the other stuff go, and you may say, hey, I don't want to, you know, I don't care about optics. You know, trying to find game out there,
you
got to have the optics. But, and then if you're going to have the optics, you have a tripod to put them on, because when you start trying to stare at something a mile and something away, the shakes in that, you know, you got to have some way to be able to get the shakes out of the glass.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so now we put those things in there, and then you get, you know, you could go without a kill kit, but then you would have to hike back out to your vehicle and back in if you killed something. So we have a lightweight knife, but I think a little thing of Visqueen, so you have a clean place to lay the deer, you know, as you're cutting deer up, so it's not getting dirt and stuff in it. You got to have that, because you're dressing those deer on the mountain. And most time, you're in a place you're not going to get up even an ATV into that deer. And if you're finding deer, you're probably way off the trail.
Yeah.
So you got to have that. And then you got to have those game bags to put the meat in, to put them in the backpack, to carry them back down. Yeah, it takes some weight there. So I may not make it back. This is basically what I'm getting to. So we'll be praying for me.
Yeah, I mean, those are tough hunts.
Physically demanding.
Those are tough hunts to do that.
But it's so satisfying if you can do it.
Absolutely. I've never done that.
It's tough.
Yeah. I usually go to, like, Canada.
Right.
I mean, that's right. I've been to Illinois bow hunting.
And that's super cold.
Yeah.
Super cold, but you don't have to hike into the spot.
No.
And it's usually flat, right?
Yeah, it's flat. Yeah, it don't have any big hills. And then you go in and sitting in a stand.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not nowhere. And then they drive you in with a four-wheel drive.
Right.
You know.
But you got to survive the cold up there.
Oh, yeah, it's cold, but it's not like you're enduring a lot. You got to endure the cold, the mountains, up and downs. And then if you kill one, he falls off the mountain and goes down in the hole down there. Then you got to get down there and get him. I mean,
I hadn't been in this situation yet, because I'm pretty new to this stuff. I killed him my first trip, got lucky, but I hear these guys are out there like, yeah, seen a good one today, but I wasn't shooting them there.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, there's places out there people see a good buck they want to shoot and don't shoot it, because they're like, I couldn't get him out of there.
No, because you got to go way down in the bottom of that valley, and then you got to get back up on that hill.
They make decisions on what they're shooting based on where the deer or elk is.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah,
I would too.
You know, it's like, and then, I could kill him, but I couldn't get him.
But then what if too? It's, you know, maybe an hour before dark, and you see a good one, and he's way over there, and, you know, what do you do then?
Nice thing is, usually it's cold enough that it'll make it till the next day.
Yeah.
You might have to knock a mountain lion off of it, but claim it for yourself. All right, we're out of here. Be back next week for more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Y'all have a great weekend outside. Get out there and enjoy it. Prep Sports Report on the way next.